Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Adequate notice of this meeting on October 28, 2019, as required by Chapter 231, PL 1975, has been provided by a public notice on January 7, 2019, which was posted on the bulletin board at the Roosevelt Post Office, on the bulletin board in the Roosevelt Post Office, and in the Borough Hall. The notice was published in the Times and the Asbury Park Press. Roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Here.
Mr. Dermody?
Here.
Mr. Ethicoff? Absent. Mr. Hamilton?
Here.
Mr. Trammell?
Here.
And Mr. Grohman?
Here.
And Mayor Malkin?
Here. Okay, well, I have a few remarks, but I'll actually save them until the end of the meeting. They were more of a sort of personal nature. So I'm going to go right to public comment on the agenda items only, opening at 7. I don't know, it's such a glare. 7:02. Would anyone like to come to the mic and speak about anything on the agenda? Mike?
Michael Tickton, 37 North Valley Road. The resolution about support for transportation electrification, is this in the agenda? Is it going to be added to the agenda officially by motion?
Yeah, I was going to move to add that during new business.
Okay. But probably should be added at the time of the agenda, actually.
Should we do that now, Kevin?
Yeah, I would do that now. So we're going to formally make a motion.
Yeah, so I'll make a motion to adopt Resolution 19-110. This was recommended to the council by the Environmental Commission, and it's essentially just a letter on behalf of the town that would express our interest in supporting the expansion of infrastructure for electric vehicles moving forward in the state, as we hopefully face towards transportation that will create less emissions. So it's just a letter that would go directly to the state and show the town support for such infrastructure to be introduced.
Do you have a second?
So is this to amend the agenda?
This is to officially amend the agenda.
I'm moving to add
okay,
this.
So we're adding this, right, and we're going to put it under new business.
I'd also like to note that Councilman Esikoff has arrived.
What did you say?
That you're here.
We just need a voice vote on this to add it to the agenda.
I'm here, yes.
Okay, let me. Yes, so I have a first.
Okay.
And a second, Joe.
And a second is Joe.
Joe, okay.
Do we need
all in favor?
Okay, all in favor of adding this to the agenda tonight?
Aye.
Anything else for public comment on the agenda? All right, we will close it at 7:04.
Oh, you started early tonight.
Approval of minutes. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes of October 15th?
I'll make that motion.
Second?
Second.
Roll call.
Let me just make sure everyone was
here.
Here.
I was
so just Chad.
Except Chad.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr. Germany?
Yes.
Mr. Ethicoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
And Mr. Grohman?
Abstain. Okay.
Come to correspondence. The first thing on the list is a letter from New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, dated October 17, 2019, concerning the Notice of Capacity Assurance Program Threshold Exceedance. Mm-hmm. Do you want to explain that, Joe, briefly?
That's the amount of fluid that the sewer plant takes in, and I spoke to Mike about that. He said we usually get that letter around March or
Mike
May.
Lyons?
Mike Lyons, yeah. Who runs the plant. He said we usually get that around May. It's really just to let them know that, you know, we have more capacity than that, and he'll get back to them, and that'll be okay.
Okay. Right? So. And then we received a letter from a resident, Janet Genest, on October 18, 2019, the gist of which was that she hopes that when we pass a tree ordinance, it's a fair and balanced ordinance. Third thing is the Monmouth County Clerk news release dated October 18, 2019, concerning student video contest to commemorate the centennial of the 19th Amendment. Unfortunately, we received this really late to send out a notice to our to students. Do you know what the age?
High school.
High school, that's what I thought. So we really just got this the other day, and the deadline is in a couple of days. Yeah. So this was, I'm not sure if the high school kids themselves learned about this at school.
I would think they would, too.
And our kids go to Mercer County High School. So
yeah, I know that. I think Lori and I discussed that. But
And I found out through Larissa that we have a video club for the kids.
Yeah.
And so I think they should include grammar.
Well, they're not
school
high
kids.
School, though.
I think they should include grammar school.
Oh, I see
kids
what you're saying, yeah.
Just because, you know.
Write to them and recommend that for next year.
Yeah.
And last, we have a letter from Roberts Engineering Group dated October 22, 2019, improvements to Nerco Road and Elm Court. Come to ordinances. The second reading and public hearing on Ordinance 19-05, an ordinance of the Borough of Roosevelt augmenting the Borough Code to include new Section 5-13, Pet Waste, to provide enforcement mechanisms for the proper disposal of pet waste. So I'm going to open the hearing at
7:08.
Anyone have anything they'd like to say about pet waste? I'm going to close the public hearing at 7:08. Okay. Just open. Ask for a motion now.
Mm-hmm.
So, do I have a motion for to adopt 19-05?
Yes.
Second.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Bowen.
Yes.
Mr. Dermody.
Yes.
Mr. Essikoff.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
And Mr. Grumman?
Yes.
Okay. That passes. We've come to the second reading and public hearing of Ordinance 19-06, an ordinance of the Borough of Roosevelt augmenting the Borough Code to include new Chapter 19, Tree Protection, to regulate the removal of trees from all lands within the borough. I'll open that hearing at 7:09. Does anyone have anything that... Neil?
Yeah.
Mike?
Neil Marco, Eleanor Lane, Roosevelt. I just have a question. I've been reading through this tree ordinance. Is there any provisions in there for or restrictions on removing non-native invasive trees?
Well, to be honest, there's probably going to be a committee meeting. I'm not sure that this will pass tonight because there's more to study. So that probably, I know that.
So I guess there is no provision in there because I didn't see any.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know that one of the suggestions that was made was that we also include some ornamental trees in there because it's not, not just.
Does this jive with the landscape ordinance that the borough has?
Well, what we're going to do is put together a committee meeting with some Roosevelt landscape architects on the committee. So.
Can I comment on that?
Sure.
I think the landscape architect bill is for more than three houses or so many acres or something. It's not one house and dictating landscaping for one existing house.
I seem to recall that the landscape ordinance had provisions in there that essentially protected native species and discouraged or even
invasive species.
I understand what you're saying.
The way I read this here right now, just as an example, I have one time had a whole bunch of Russian olives in my backyard, which are invasive foreign species, and it seems like I wouldn't have been able to cut them down.
Yeah, well, this is... Yeah. I don't believe this is a final product. As I said, we're going to put together... We have a few people in town who are landscape architects, and... we're going to include them in the meeting. I think the meeting will be open to the public.
And I also want to add that we
are still going to receive a lot of information from the Environmental Commission that we will use and probably incorporate into this ordinance. And I think that it'll probably stay open for a while for more input from the public, yeah. And also, you know, to make sure that it's not overly restrictive. I think that that's the important thing. One of the important issues is that it's not overly restrictive, and it also includes provisions for retaining native species that we want to retain, and not to prohibit the removal of things like Russian olive or right. invasive species. So I think it needs to be worked on, yeah. And it'll probably go to committee, and there'll be a lot more input received on it. Yeah.
And as I said, they were mentioning that there are some ornamental species that need to be protected. And we do want it to be balanced. We don't want it to be overly restrictive, but we also want to prevent a lot of the clear cutting that's been taking place.
And we would, and also we would have an arborist on retainer,
right,
to make the final decision rather than have somebody who's knowledgeable, and rather than have somebody in town doing it.
Can you define clear cutting?
Well, I really, Neil, it's not ready. It's probably not. I mean, I can assure you it won't be passed tonight.
Well,
we're gonna.
Well,
so it's not.
I understand that, but I just.
The ordinance is more than 20% of the trees on a slope of more than 15% or 20% of the trees outside the building envelope.
Right. I just bring that up because, I mean, in the past I've had conversations with people with historical knowledge of the borough. Michael, you can chime in. And a lot of the areas of the greenbelt were originally intended for community gardens and so forth, and it's just through the lack of people using them that they basically have become overgrown with trees. So one other thing to consider is that when you say clear cutting, if somebody wants to cut down a bunch of trees behind their house and plant a garden inside the greenbelt, maybe they should be allowed to do that because that's the intent of the community.
Well, they might be allowed to do that. Yeah. I mean, so this isn't a blanket prohibition. I mean, you can go to the land use board for relief. It's basically putting a layer of regulation on top of tree removal. And so it's written very stringently, and the governing body's got a lot of feedback and given me a lot of feedback that they don't want, that this might be too stringent. And so I think we're going to have a committee meeting. I'm going to take a vote now. I don't think it's going to pass, if I had to bet. But your point is well taken. That being said, this isn't a prohibition against anything. It means you have to come and get permission to do it. So you would be allowed to create a vegetable garden or whatever you'd be able to put a presentation on before the planning and zoning.
I'm talking about the green belt specifically, I mean, which is community property.
Michael, do you want to come and speak about the Environmental Commission and the directives that you've received from the state? Would that address it at all? Well, the state is, we get directives from the state all the time concerning tree protection. I mean, we've gotten many.
Yeah. I just want to make a few comments. First of all, Michael Tixon.
What Neil's referring to, one thing that an individual can't go in and do something on the land behind their house, you know, without permission of the borough. It's borough property.
Right. So that. Clearly, it's borough property, but from what I understand, historically, the intent was that it was specifically there for community purposes.
If the community was to do that, the community might do it, but an individual can't do that on their own. With the state, of course, we are participating in this program for this community forestry program to encourage, you know, proper care of the forests, and have people, and we get credit for the various programs that we attend. And okay. What I wanted to say, two meetings ago when this was first discussed, I pointed out some technical problems with this ordinance. I see none of them were addressed in this, so I just want to reiterate them again for the record. Okay, so hopefully if this does go forward, which probably would be in the next year anyway, because anything that goes in dies at the end of December anyway. When clear cutting, it's where it says within an area of a lot. It doesn't specify what an area. If you want to took the word and out, perhaps I don't know if that would make it clear. But if you meant the area of the lot outside of the footprint, but if you say an area of the lot, it can be any area of the lot.
We were just
that'd be very vague, and you know, if it's very vague, it's unenforceable. So don't want to clarify that language.
We actually were discussing that before the meeting.
Yeah, right, okay, yeah. And then the various places here where it refers to the, where it refers to, again, area of a lot, refers to the Zoning Board of Adjustment, the Shade Tree Commission, neither of which exists. So we wouldn't want to, you know, we want to not have those references. The also in that Exhibit A, the maximum number of trees that can be removed, it talks about R1 zone down to R6 zone, and those aren't the names of our zones. So again, if we wanted to,
I think this was a prototype.
Yeah, I understand, but this was put forward
for
first reading. This is what
it
was passed on first reading and put forward in second reading without the change being made. So that's what I'm saying. If it goes and there's a reference in 19.9 to the being a protective barrier acceptable to the construction official. If you're not talking about something that's under the construction code, the construction officials who are state officials in this case, they don't get involved in anything that the local, you know, anything local that is created. We have our own code enforcement official for that. So you might not want to try to delegate any responsibilities to the construction official who you have no control over. Okay. And Lucas has the we discussed it extensively at the Environmental Commission. I think Luke can speak on that later.
Good.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Steve?
Steve Mocker, 17 Farm Lane. I think in that ordinance you've also left a lot of things a little loose as far as, you know, who's going to be responsible for making the determination, what tree expert. You leave it up to the tree official to decide who does that with no, you know, with nothing spelled out as far as qualifications go.
Yeah.
So it kind of leaves that to open to be a kind of a moving target.
Yeah, we discussed that,
yeah,
and we're going to put specifications for that.
Having our code enforcement.
An arborist or, you know, somebody with credentials.
You know, and I'm concerned that also the way things are worded now, it kind of appears that, you know, if I have a diseased tree on the property, I want to take it down.
No,
it could possibly turn a $1,000 job into a $2,000 job by the time I have to pay for your tree expert to do his work. So, anyhow.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Tim?
Tim Hartley, 29 Farm Lane. I might be the only planning board member here. And while we don't have a zoning board of adjustment, we have a combined board where those responsibilities come to the planning board. Also, I'm a member of the Environmental Commission with Michael, and yeah, we had a lot of discussion about it the other evening, but I think the gist of it and my personal feeling is that however the wording ends up, there are going to be instances where people disagree with what they're allowed to do, and it's going to fall to the borough official that's assigned to help figure that out, and then beyond that, it's going to come back to the planning board and its zoning board role to adjudicate that or to review variance requests. So I think we have to be, very careful about the wording going forward. I got the sense that what we looked at the other day was really just a first draft, but it really needs to be tailored to Roosevelt per se. And I think definitely want to involve both the planning board and environmental commission, because both have an interest in this, in any further discussion before it comes back for another reading. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment.
No, public comment.
Oh, this is the this is the hearing. All right, I just got lost. All right, so does anyone else have anything they'd like to say as part of the hearing on the tree ordinance? Okay, we'll close this hearing at 7:20. Do I have a motion? To adopt.
I'll make a motion to the table.
I'll second that.
Do we have to do it all in favor or table?
Yeah,
okay, all right, roll call.
The table you can take.
And as we table it, we can have further discussion with the public and this committee.
And yeah, I mean, just the changes that were given to me before tonight will require to be reintroduced.
Okay.
So there's going to be two more meetings where we talk about this.
Okay.
Sure.
Cool.
Basically, just on what you guys had.
Absolutely.
In a short time, we have to get it before the meeting.
So all in favor of tabling?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Right, come to resolutions. Resolution 19-109, payment of bills for October 28th.
I'll make a motion to pay the bills.
I'll second.
You have to go? Okay. All right. Any discussion? Being none, have the roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr. Dermody?
Yes.
Mr. Essipoff?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yep.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
And Mr. Grumman?
Yes.
Committee chair reports?
Can we talk about the resolution that we introduced at the beginning of the meeting?
Do you want to do that as part of your committee report?
Well, I thought we added it to the agenda.
We did under new business.
Okay, so it won't be voted on tonight.
No, it can
be. Just
so you can discuss it, but we're going to
wait till the end of the
meeting. That's the electric?
Yeah.
Yes. So if you want to discuss, I would definitely do that now.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It's just a letter that the borough would send to the state, and it would show our support for essentially investing in more charging infrastructures for electric cars in the future. Not on the borough's behalf necessarily, but just as a state. And it's just something that a lot of towns are doing to voice support for the movement in general.
So it's something we should consider at some point, putting charging stations here?
Well, right now it's just really...
It's just for the state, right?
Right, it's just a vote of our support for the initiative. But yeah, ultimately we could look into charging stations in Roseville as well. But that'd be down the line.
On a question, as we would support this, as I would the state provide any incentives if we want to put a charging station here in Borough Hall?
I haven't heard anything about that yet, but I would like to think that if we showed our support now, they would hopefully provide something like that in the future.
Hopefully.
Well, right. Hope is not a plan. yeah, that was my question as far as is the state going to fund
that's what I was thinking.
Fund
I didn't want
the
to
installation
ask.
And maintenance, and that charging station gets power from somewhere. Who's footing the bill for that power?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
You know, because I've read through this, and when they say about lower costs of electricity to homeowners, okay, so if I'm not charging the vehicle in my house, I'm charging it somewhere else.
Right.
Who's they're paying for electricity, right. And either way, you're paying for it one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Well, good point, Sean.
I think people who don't have electric cars will be a little upset if they're paying for somebody else's gasoline.
Fake gasoline.
Ask California.
Yeah.
They're now imposing a surcharge on electric vehicle owners because they're not paying at the pump on the taxes, so the infrastructure with those gas taxes aren't being realized from the electric car owners. So now all those incentives that the electric vehicle owners were getting are now being reduced because they're not paying for gas.
So you're not going to escape from
that's correct.
Tax.
Yeah, the bills are not going away. They're just being displaced from one pocket to another.
Peter and Paul. So is there any way we could canvass the state about these questions?
I could look into the implications of our support for this and what that might look like in the future. So maybe we can table it and talk about it next meeting.
I'm up for that, yeah. I support the electric thing, but like Chad said.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
To whose
advantage? Who's going to pay for it?
Okay.
Are you done with your
so do you
yeah, so we can just, under new business, I guess, table it.
Okay.
Councilmember Bowen?
Not a lot to report. The sidewalk got done, as you can hopefully see, out front here.
And looks beautiful.
Greg Placille's getting ready to paint the speed humps. We have the paint. It's on his schedule. branches and stuff have been removed from that were blocking some of the signs around town. And that's about it.
You sure you can't get them to move the, remove the street signs and you have Farm Lane? I hate the damn things.
Are we still doing
and new business? And they're not affecting.
No, we're doing furniture. We haven't gotten to new business yet.
No, the speed bumps.
Oh, the speed bumps.
Okay, like Councilmember Esikoff, administration?
Yes? We're still administrating thanks to the great staff that we have. It's on top of everything and knows everything that goes on.
Thank you.
And we I personally, and I'm sure the council does and this community should, very much appreciate their work. They really do a great job.
Absolutely true.
I have one item that I would like to bring up, and that's branch pickup. I think we can... And we've discussed it with our staff. We can have a situation where we will pick up branches, reasonable size branches. If you bring them to the curb, we will pick them up once, maybe every week and a half, 2 weeks, or however the time permits, and we will take them to the to our station where we park them. And then we will have them chipped at no cost to anyone. But we will, in the final analysis, we will save money because we would not have to have someone come twice a year or whatever. We do it twice a year now.
Well, we really were only doing it once a year. We did it twice this year because we had so many storms.
Well,
and so much
we would not have to pay for twice a year and less time once a year. One day instead of 2 days when we have it done through the town. And in the long run, that's quite a bit of savings.
So what you're saying is like people could just put them on the curb?
Put them on the curb, and we will pick them up within a couple of days, a week or so. And that'll be once. We haven't got the exact time.
Yeah, it's in the discussion
and I don't think
stages
we should have.
Now.
What?
It's in the discussion stages now to see logistically see how to work it out.
Yeah, what we could, how much time our maintenance people have, and but we will do it. I'm quite certain that we will have some kind of a program, and we will let everybody know as soon as the program gets finalized. We will let everybody know, and I think it's a very good idea.
Do we have a chipper?
We have no. We. Hightstown comes and chips it at a much lower rate than anybody else would do for us. Much lower rate. So we have this it's a good thing because save money and make it nice and clean for everybody.
Like a trailer.
What?
A trailer to pick the stuff up.
We got the pickup truck.
No, Greg just uses the pickup truck.
No, we'll have a pickup truck. Well, we've even talked about getting a small, what do you call it? A trailer in the back, one of those trailers. They're not all that expensive, and find out how we can do that. And then we'll do it.
Well, we certainly have a lot more storms, and branches are constantly.
Yeah, but if it's done right, if we do it correctly, and everybody cooperates, there shouldn't be that many on every tour. There shouldn't be that many that we need a tractor trailer. Yeah. Okay.
Good. Yeah. Thank you, Lou.
Yep.
Okay, Councilmember Dermody, Community Development, and.
So I just wanted to relay the conversation that the Environmental Commission had in regard to the tree ordinance, a lot of which has already been touched on tonight. But the Commission's main suggestions were to, one, simplify the ordinance, make it a little less restrictive, and narrow the scope of it to essentially only worry about clear cutting. The general consensus, which is such a long, wordy document, especially in Roosevelt, might discourage people from properly caring for their trees rather than encourage them. So along with a simplified version, we'd like to distribute more educational material on the safe and proper way to maintain our trees. And that could discuss native versus invasive species and certain specimen trees that we might want to protect. As Steve pointed out, and he was at the meeting as well, the proposed ordinance at the moment, I think, creates a lot of costs both on the borough and the homeowner side, and there would also be a lot of enforcement issues as far as disputes when a decision is made about a specific tree. I also did core training for the Shade Tree Commission this past weekend, and I spoke to a few officials from them, and they also were on the side of trying to educate people more than set restrictions and felt that that would be more effective in the long run. So yeah, I think Mike and Greg and I and maybe a couple others are going to meet this coming week or two and try to propose something for the next meeting that we can hopefully get passed by the end of the year that would be a bit less restrictive.
Shade Tree Commission is the county Shade Tree Commission?
That's the state.
State.
Yeah. They're basically in charge of trees and all the public right-of-ways. So.
Cool. Okay.
There is a county, too.
Yeah. I know, but it's with the state. Yeah. So.
Thank you, Luke. Mm-hmm. Councilmember Hamilton, Finance.
We've received several requests from the Roosevelt First Aid Squad for their donation, which we traditionally give, and it's budgeted for distribution to the First Aid Squad. We tried to come up with a couple dates, I think, for a possible meeting so we can sit down and see how we can work out a proper donation based on the financials and that kind of thing. We weren't able to come up with a date yet, but the committee would like to sit down with a representative, hopefully a financial, somebody who has access to the treasurer's reports and the financials so that we can review them and see to what level the borough can really help facilitate the squad and meet their needs. But we need to be able to sit down and work with that and see some of the official records so that we know what level of aid is appropriate to give from the borough. One of the difficulties is that this is an annual donation. And with donations to a private entity that is not a borough entity, it's not a governmental agency of the borough, we don't have access to the financial records. You guys have that. We don't. But we need to be able to review that and see to what extent we want to distribute public tax dollars, because we have a fiduciary responsibility to the public. We have their tax dollars in our coffers, and we need to be able to look at the finances and to see to what extent that we want to finance what the needs are. And we really want to have a very open discussion just based on finances for what's appropriate, what the First Aid Squad's needs are. I know all of us value what the squad does, all the activities that they do. They've done a lot for the town, and we really need to continue to work with them. But we need to sit down, and we need to have a good, frank discussion just about the finances. So hopefully tonight, since we're all here, we can come up with some dates for a finance meeting, and we could sit down and we can review the financials. But we would like financial reports, official financial reports from the treasurer, and we'd like to take a look at that. End of report.
I agree. I think $20,000 is a lot of money, and we would like to know how it goes, where it goes. I think anybody who gives that kind of money asks, and we're entitled to ask.
And I think we'd like to support. We'd like to support the squad for everything that they do, and there's a lot of expenditures for that.
No, we'd like to know what they are.
Yeah, so we just need to sit down and we need to work that out if we can do that. So if we can come up, whoever can come up with a couple meeting dates, we'd be glad to sit down and figure that out.
I can't imagine using 20,000.
Well, we'll look at it. We'll see. End of report. Yeah.
Can you?
Okay. Councilmember Roman?
No,
you do that every meeting. There's something about your last name, Joe, that my eye just skips right over it.
It's a new alphabet.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
We're doing okay with the water. John and I are going to meet. John water maven and I are going to meet and discuss things about the water plant, the water tower. I see that AT&T wants to come and do an essay, a structural analysis, and Carmella is good for that.
So Carmella's really been on this.
Yeah.
I think they were.
I don't know if I ever mentioned it. I think I put a letter in maybe 4, 5, 6 months ago that AT&T broke into the water tower and they were spreading antennas and wires out and they were just going to go up and install them. And John Holden and I stopped them from doing that and we told them we'd call the state police the next time they broke in. But this is the formal way to do it. A structural analysis. We want to know what they're going to do there, how much weight they're going to put on, what kind of metal they're going to use, all of the above. So that's.
Is this for their antenna?
AT&T wants to upgrade their antenna
and transmitter systems.
And in the meantime, we have other people that are looking to use the water tower for their antenna, so we don't want one to step on the other, which is quite possible if we don't keep an eye on.
Yeah, that's important.
And the, you know, very the weight.
And they all have separate generators.
And wind loading and everything
else.
Well,
the new people will have to deal with their generators, you know. So, okay, the sewer plant, yes, we got this letter about 80% of 90% of capacity, but that's apparently every year they get the letter and they have to say, well, we have this much capacity and so it's really another form, per se, that the sewer maven, John Mike Lyons, has to fill out. And they're plowing away. They are doing repairs to things as opposed to calling in, like the big companies, municipal maintenance, pumping services. So they're doing their own repairs, which cost, but it's 10 times cheaper than having the big people come in and do it themselves. So we're doing okay with our people doing our maintenance. Unless it's bigger than them, then they call the other folks in.
Both for water and sewer.
Water and sewer, yeah. So we're I think we're quite lucky to have these people working for us. And we'll keep an eye. We'll do oversight, but I'm quite happy with the way they're doing their things out there. So.
What about the aerators?
Yeah.
I think that's universal.
They're working. Yeah, the trickle filters are working.
So we don't have to repair and replace them.
Is it, Joe?
Not right now. Yes, end of report.
Okay.
Yeah. One day.
I think you should change seats because I'm already looking at Mike for his report, and I think that's why I naturally go to you. So if you change with Joe next time.
We'll also in alphabetical order.
I like it here. I can play with the knobs.
Council Member Vroman, Environmental Health and Safety.
I have nothing additional to add than, what than what's already been covered this evening so far, but you know, going off what Lou and you know Mike had already stated about as far as for the donation to the first aid squad, like any other you know charitable organization where you provide a donation, especially a sizable donation, you know, financial accountability is typically one of those things. I mean, even like with United Way, you can look and go and see their financials as far as how that money is being spent, where it's being utilized. So
oversight.
Correct.
Yep.
We might, yeah. I mean, that's a definite possibility if you want to provide the level of support that you need to get the job done, yeah.
Thanks, Jeff. Okay. Reports of borough officials. Anything else, Mike?
Okay, thank you. I just want to elaborate a bit on what Luke has said on this resolution and what this is. To give you an idea what this really is about, the problem that they're trying to deal with, if you recall many years ago when you had, you remember televisions that went from channel 2 to channel 13 and that's all you had. Okay, and UHF existed, but the problem was the UHF stations needed somebody to watch them, and nobody was manufacturing UHF televisions because they didn't have enough stations to watch. So the two things were So this is a way of getting ahead of this and installing the getting the state to encourage by whatever means. They're not talking about giving away electricity or anything. Presumably, there's some way you'd pay for it if you got your car charged. But putting these charging stations in at convenient locations around the state so that this would allow people to buy electric cars and use them with some reasonable assurance that they could drive and they'd be able to recharge their car to be able to get home. Mm-hmm. So that's what this is basically about, is doing. And what the resolution does is just asking the municipalities to support two pieces of legislation that are currently pending that are intended to do this. So it's basically just support for legislation. If you look at it, because it just says support the principal electrification of transportation, you know, for the reasons mentioned, that it's, you know, that's good for the environment to, you know, to use fuel more efficiently and, you know, to by producing electricity rather than each car burning their own fuel, and that these two bills, the companion bills, Senate and Assembly bills, are asking the legislature to pass them to expand, with the intention that to expand the charging infrastructure around the state and programs for rebates to encourage people to have to switch over to electric vehicles, and then encouraging nonprofits and agencies, I assume that means municipal agencies, and county agencies to try to find funds to try to encourage electrification of fleets. That's all. That's what it
and
says.
I see the other thing it does that it doesn't say in here, actually, yep. is it requires all the authorities to install them at the rest areas on the expressways, the turnpikes.
Right.
It requires the authorities to find the money in their budget to install them on okay. the service areas. Yep. I know I've read the Senate bill.
Right.
It doesn't actually say it in this resolution, but part of that bill,
okay.
their intention is
right,
to require Turnpike Authority, the South Jersey, I can't remember, South Jersey sometimes.
Well, the expressways, but
right. So that's part of this bill too. It's not
right.
mentioned. This
they didn't mention it, right?
But a lot of the ones they're talking about are going to be installed by the authorities mm-hmm. under their budget, and the state law requires them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, and I see that both bills, the Assembly Bill 2252 or Senate Bill 2252 and Assembly Bill 4819 are both mentioned on here.
That's right. That's
so
correct.
So we have the opportunity to look at these bills.
We can certainly look at them. Yeah, we can look them up and read them before the next meeting. Yeah. Right.
And but that's what anybody who's ever seriously considered buying an all-electric vehicle
right.
has run into this issue where they say, you know, can I get it? Where can I get it charged?
Yeah.
Is it feasible for me to do that, or do I need to get a hybrid or whatever, because I won't be able to charge it and get to where I need to go, which may be a couple hundred miles up the road.
Well, 200 to 300 miles is about maximum for an electric.
Plus, there's an expenditure for installing that charging station
in
at your house
at your
too.
House, yeah.
And this would help alleviate those expenditures and help lower some of those barriers to doing that and help facilitate the expansion.
So this for us to really test this, I think,
read it over and look at the next meeting. But it has to be, if you're going to pass it for these bills, you have to do it, you know, before the end of the year, because of the lame duck set. Right. All these bills die at the end of the year. So
it's just showing support.
Yeah, right. There'll be new bills put in, presumably, if it doesn't
pass. Doesn't affect us yet.
It's
like to read it before. So
sure.
Support,
sure, but that's, I just want to explain that that's,
general,
that's what it's that's what essentially it was, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Is there any old business that anyone would like to discuss at the table?
You let us use the school and the Borough Hall for that the Benjamin Brown thing the other day, and I think that was
I was going to discuss that at the end.
I think it went very nicely, and I think the town should be proud of themselves to do something like that. You know, so
I'll talk a little bit about it.
Okay.
You know, but I'm a little disturbed about something this room was left in disarray to a great extent as far as the furniture and everything else. It was left to the borough employees to put it back together. Now, if we rent it out to somebody, we get a deposit, yes, an escrow deposit to make sure that everything is put back where it belongs and so on. And it took quite a few, you know, of our employees' time to put it back together. And I think that next time we do something like this, we have to inform them.
Well,
they got to put it back together.
This was a very unique kind of situation, because it was kind of a Founders Day kind of thing involving the borough, too. And so the borough facilities had to be used, and it wasn't really extended into the borough's domain as far as the setup in here. We had to have the borough employees help with some of the different things, and that was a
a unique situation, and mainly because it was Benjamin Brown, their family, and related to, you know, the founding of our town. We don't usually run into that with RAP functions, where usually if it's a RAP function, it's just a RAP function. RAP's responsible for 100% of everything, including bringing the room back to its original condition.
I'm just letting you know that it was...
We did clear the school out. Everything over there was back to the way of, like, the Boy Scouts. It was better than it was when we got there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess, unfortunately, that's not what happened here.
No, it didn't happen that way here.
Yeah. Licking my wounds.
It took some effort to put it back together.
It was a huge, huge event, and there was a lot to do. I know Peggy came back here, was here till around 1:30 in the morning, cleaning and working on this room.
Two
in the morning on Sunday morning, working in here to help because the family was here. There was a big function here in addition to the school. So it was just one of those huge events that, you know, we would have liked to add more help and more volunteer help too, but we did the best we could. But no, you're right. In general, we have a deposit. The room needs to be brought back to its original.
I wouldn't ask the Roosevelt Art Project to give us a deposit, but I certainly would let them know that they have to provide somebody in here if they have to pay him to come and do it to put it back together, because from what I heard, Anna was pushing tables and all kinds. You know, she has better things to do than that.
Yeah.
We're lucky we have Anna.
That's right. I'm her boss, I know.
Any other old business? Okay, we come to new business. First on the list is the use of the Borough Hall. Speak of the devil for a RAP event scheduled on November 2nd. 2019, and then January 25th, February 8th, March 28th, April 25th, and May 9th of all of 2020 at 8 p.m. We want to give our approval now. Is that
motion
to approve?
Be conditioned upon the cleanup, or
yes,
it couldn't hurt.
That's right. With the condition.
Well, we can make that known.
Okay.
Motion to approve?
Is that your motion?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, and I'll second that. Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Abstain. I'm a rep member.
Oh, okay.
You're
so it's kind of a built-in conflict.
So it's your fault?
Yeah.
It's my fault.
Just a worker.
Mea culpa.
Yeah. Resolution from the Borough of Tinton Falls urging voters to support the referendum on the election ballot in November so that veterans or widows, spouses of veterans who reside in continuing care retirement communities will be eligible for property tax reduction. Does anybody want me to read that again? That's a mouthful.
At least three more times.
So this was the resolution. It's all in your packet.
Yeah.
I will move that.
Okay. Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
It's about $250 off of their tax, I believe, which is not a big deal, and we should support our veterans and their widowed spouses.
Okay. I agree.
So if that's the fact, I have the resolution here from Tinton Falls. Mm-hmm.
It's in our package.
I didn't prepare one because the election is next week.
Oh.
So it's gotta be adopted tonight if you want.
Great.
All right.
Sure.
So I'll have to read it.
All right.
And we can memorialize it after.
And memorialize it after?
Yeah.
Okay. So you want me to read it though? Or no, just memorialize it after.
Or we could just do a resolution joining in Tinton Falls' resolution.
Yeah.
That seems simpler.
Oh.
There you go.
Well, you'd be able to pick up.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to describe what the resolution is to everyone? Mm-hmm. So long story short, the referendum would The Constitution authorizes veterans and widow spouses of veterans who served in active duty during wartime and other times of emergency, includes the National Guard as well, to receive a $250 per year property tax deduction. Presently, those that live, those veterans and widowed spouses of veterans who reside in continuing care residential communities or assisted living communities in the common vernacular are no longer entitled to that deduction because they're no longer in their house, notwithstanding that they may own it still, even though they're in an assisted living facility. And so this change in the rule, the legislation sponsored by Ben Gopal, our local Mountain County Senator, would essentially extend that deduction to people who fall into that circumstance. But in order to obtain that, the original deduction was passed in the state constitution, so you need a referendum to do that. You can't just pass it by an act of the legislature. So this is urging the voters to support the referendum on the election ballot in November to change the state constitution to extend that $250 property tax credit to seniors residing, seniors who are active duty veterans who live in assisted living or continuing, legal term is continuing care retirement communities.
But they still own their houses? Is that
well, you're not entitled to deduction unless you own the property. That's
right,
the number one requirement of it. So it's really to address people who are living in assisted living facilities who aren't otherwise entitled to the deduction, but they still own
their house, right.
Former primary residence.
Exactly. Right.
So it's not a big deal in terms of money for tax revenue, but it is something that would really help these people.
Depends on, it's the whole state, so depends on what you think is a lot. I mean, there's a lot of active duty veterans, especially after the Iraq and Afghanistan wars now, who are entitled to that credit if they meet the other parameters. So I suspect it's a substantial sum of money, probably millions of dollars.
Millions,
You know, for Roosevelt, I'm not sure.
Okay. But for a good cause.
Okay. So we would need a mover and a seconder on a resolution supporting
Tinton Falls
resolution urging support for the election ballot question in November.
Right. And I got my sample ballot in today or yesterday, I think, and that question is on the ballot for the 4th of November
So moved.
So we should all be aware of that, you know. So if you think that's a good cause, you should vote yes.
I think it's the only question on it this time.
Mm-hmm. It's the only question,
This is a resolution urging voters to vote yes on the election ballot question.
I'll move that.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And speaking of sample ballot, I did get one, and it's up on the bulletin board.
And what about Luke's?
So I'm just going to move the table, the resolution 19-110, so everybody can look up the bills online, and we can talk about it next meeting.
Right.
So do you want to?
So yeah, I'll move the table
move
that
the table?
Until
all right,
next
second.
Second.
Right.
Okay.
And all in favor?
Aye.
That's the electric bill.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
I get one of those.
Comment at 7:54.
Calling Megan.
Oh. Tell Megan at 7:54.
That happened. Sorry.
It's me. Listening.
I pressed it to see what time it was, the exact time, because it's the glare. I can't see the clock.
Especially the
Google. 7:54.
7:54. Public comment. Okay. So this is public comment on any item at all. Neil.
Neil Marco, president of the Roosevelt First Aid Squad. I've lived in Roosevelt. I'm going to read what I wrote. I've lived in Roosevelt for over 30 years, and I've been an EMT on the Roosevelt First Aid Squad for 20 years this coming January. In fact, I'm the longest-serving EMT on the Roosevelt First Aid Squad.
Now.
Longest active member. Yeah. All right.
Not active.
Now
that we have that clarified, go ahead.
Anyway,
semantics.
In those 20 years I've been associated with the Roosevelt First Aid Squad, I've come to appreciate the support I've gotten from the Roosevelt community. Every first aider I have known on the Roosevelt First Aid Squad has been giving of their time and energy for no other reason other than to support their friends and neighbors. The Roosevelt First Aid Squad does not send out bills for any of the services that they provide, even when they go out of town to other municipalities on mutual aid. And the borough has reciprocated that support, both in private donations and in public donations from the council. I'm going to now skip over a little bit, but as you might have noticed, our $10,000 first tranche of donation was not on today's bill list, nor was it on the last bill list from the last action meeting. And what we've been told is that the council, or I should say the governing body, has explicitly told the finance operations people to not include that on there. And as Michael pointed out, we've been requested to come and discuss our financial records, including our donations, with the Finance Committee. And about 2 weeks ago, I informed the Finance Department, and I saw the email that was forwarded to Finance members, that we will not be providing access to the Finance Committee of our financial records, mostly for privacy reasons, but also the fact that we have to be free to, you know, to operate as we see fit without being, you know, scrutinized for every single thing that we do, but mostly because of privacy concerns. It was explicitly asked that we provide information on our donations, and we have donations from people who do not want their information publicly known. All right? It is kind of bizarre that the council would request this sort of information. And from where we sit on the first aid squad, it actually shows a lack of understanding as to what are the requirements to operate a first aid squad, what's necessary, what is, and you know, what are the limitations that we have, what do we have to do in the future. I've asked the council, or I've asked the finance department to send me, this was 2 weeks ago, information as to what explicit information they want, and I've gotten no response until Michael said, maybe we should have another meeting. I've not had a second scheduled meeting set up. I haven't had any communication whatsoever. At this point in time, you know, unless we can get our donations, all right, we're going to have to start explicitly fundraising, or alternatively, start charging the residents for the services that we provide. And as I was just conferring with my fellow member, that probably is going to be at a minimum of $1,500 a run applied to the members here. So if you take that $1,500 a run, you can really kind of see that $20,000 a year to maintain a first aid squad is actually a very, very small amount. And from personal experience, we've gone for many years denying ourselves significant facilities and upgrades that would enhance our service and also is basically standard for most of the squads that are in our area of New Jersey. Lastly, I just would like to add that it's quite ironic that on today, I have to come into the council and bring up the fact that we haven't gotten our donation, because you may not realize, but today is National First Responders Day. And there's no resolution from the council acknowledging that. And essentially, I have to come here and basically talk about why are not we not getting our donation.
Mr. Marco, two things.
Let's let the public speak first. Debbie Connors, 23 North Rochdale. I would like to just add one thing, as Neil just brought up, that if we have to start charging, it would be $1,500 a call. So we've roughly had 40 calls this year, and quick math is $60,000. So $20,000 is not that much to give to the squad. The squad is extremely frugal in their spendings. We have been trying to save money
so that we could buy a one-man stretcher. A one-man stretcher cost $30,000 per rig. New AEDs are costing approximately $1,500 apiece per rig.
AED is...
That is
the defibrillator.
The
defibrillator.
Yeah.
It's about $20,000.
EpiPens. We have to get new EpiPens because they've expired. It's going to be in the neighborhood of $1,000. CPR devices, $20,000. These are some of what our expenses are that we have been saving for and trying to provide to the members of this town, to our neighbors. And the one thing since I have moved to this town has always been said, neighbors helping neighbors. But you know what? Our council doesn't want to allow that.
What?
We were getting $16,000. And when the fire department closed, the council at the time decided to increase the budget to us to $20,000. That's not that much in the scheme of things, especially if you're going to start looking at $1,500 a call times 40 at $60,000. Is that what you want your residents to be paying out versus $20,000? Do the math. It's a lot cheaper. Thank you.
I have a question.
No, Lula, this is the public time, so let the public speak, and then we can address all of
their concerns. I am the public.
Concerns.
I'm Irene Block. I live on Lake Drive. I am a former first aider, and I remember the financial struggle. And I think people who don't use the equipment aren't aware of what it takes to operate it. The oxygen tanks, the things that are left at a scene, bandages and gloves and whatever, all of that stuff costs a lot of money. And I don't think $20,000 is too much. It might be even too little. But I think that you can't have a good squad unless you have materials to work with. And I would be happy to help any way I can with any fundraisers. And in that vein, I've also contacted Allentown. And she's checking with her squad and getting back to me to see how we can do that whole thing. But you can't do any, you can't run on a call without oxygen. You can't run on a call without all of the stuff that you need. Well, now we're going to get electric. We just need a long cord.
That's going to cost too.
I'll be shocked when I ask.
Whoa, that was good, Neil.
Nice pun.
Lorraine. Wait, Neil. Lorraine.
Rainey Hartley, 29 Farm Lane. In the past, we have supported the first aid squad, and we do appreciate what they do for the town. However, I worked for Chase Manhattan Bank for over 18 years, and I also understand fiduciary responsibilities. And to me, this sounds more like an oversight function. If the first aid squad is complaining that we don't understand their costs, well, that's why we're asking for an explanation in writing. I don't think that's asking too much. And if they want to, you know, for privacy reasons, blot out who gave how much, no, I don't think we really care about that so much as how much have they gotten in donations and how much are their expenses and what are the expenses for. I think that's a reasonable request.
Thank you, Amy.
I want to bring up one other historical point, all right, and then make an offering.
Okay. Can, for the record, just
Neil Marco, President, Roosevelt First Aid Squad. We all remember all the emergency services machinations that went on in the past years. One of the aspects of that is how would the borough respond, deal with our garaging situation. This has been something that has been a serious problem for us for many, many, many years. In particular, all right, trying to drive a rig that's this big into a spot that's this big is quite challenging, and in the past we've had issues. But even that aside, the bigger problem that we have garaging is the fact that there's no ventilation system which was supposed to be installed by the borough in the garage. It's in, you know, it's a health hazard that when you start up these diesel trucks in this confined area and the whole room fills with diesel exhaust fumes, every squad that I've been to, every firehouse, every first aid building has some sort of active ventilation except for ours. Now, to get back to our particular finances, I think that it would be perfectly acceptable for us to provide GAAP standard accounting reports to the borough specifically, and hopefully those that represent the financial situation for a nonprofit.
On a question, what is GAAP standing?
Generally accepted accounting principles.
I'm sorry?
Generally accepted accounting principles.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The borough uses the same principles.
Okay. Thank you.
No, the borough uses municipal accounting
systems. No, we follow GAAP.
Too. You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's strange, but I'd be happy, we've discussed it, and basically we could actually provide that. Our concern, by the way, just for me to reiterate it, is that basically we do not want to, expose our financial situation and our financial operations basically in a public forum, or even to basically people who may not have an understanding as to the exact nature of what we do and how we do it and what are the limitations of what we have as far as purchasing items and so forth. So if that's acceptable, I'd be happy to provide that information.
Are you the treasurer?
No, I'm the president.
Who's the treasurer?
Joe, let's wait until everyone, and then we can really get into this. Does anyone have anything else they would like to discuss at the mic, Jake?
Jacob Barrett, 10 Homestead. I have a few questions. First, I read briefly before I came here about the recycling containers. I'm wondering what the deal is. It said that they were no longer to put in bags and a clear receptacle. What is a clear receptacle? I don't even care, said they will not pick up.
Not a clear receptacle. I think it's a receptacle, not a clear receptacle.
No, it's not a receptacle at all. A few weeks ago, many residents did not have their recycling picked up. We thought it was just a note, we didn't know what it was. Yeah. Anyway, Anna called the next day, and apparently they changed their regulations, and Anna said, "What, you didn't think to tell us that?" And they said, "No." But I guess many people put lots of things in a clear plastic bag. You can no longer do that. Just dump everything into the can itself.
So no bags.
But don't bag anything.
It's not a clear can.
Not a can.
It says clear receptacle. That's
right. Yeah, they meant that.
It's any
they
plastic
meant bag.
It's
yeah,
not
they
just
meant
a
in a
clear
bag.
Clear plastic bag.
Yeah.
Not a clear receptacle.
Which apparently
but right under it says they will not pick up, so I just wanted to make sure.
Right, and apparently they had changed it a week before, and then never bothered to inform us of that. So they didn't pick up anything that was in a clear plastic bag.
Thank you. And then I wanted to bring up, I have two small children, and they are constantly out at the edge of the road and in the street. They're learning to ride the bikes, doing all that stuff. I'm wondering why. I'd love to see speed bumps on Homestead Lane. People fly, and I do my best not to get frustrated because these are my neighbors, but people fly down Homestead Lane.
We have two on Farm Lane. I'd be glad to donate.
Yeah, I understand people are not crazy about them, but it's not that hard to slow down and go over a little bit.
People who are not familiar race down, and they get to the triangle and screech on their brakes because all of a sudden they don't know which way to go.
I would love to see speed bumps on Homestead.
We are aware of that.
Maybe when they melt.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah, when the road is
several years of experience
with
two speed bumps, they don't work very well. Okay. I hear them in the middle of the night flying through, and all of a sudden they hit the speed bump and you either hear boom, 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 or screeching tires.
Yeah.
And then they pick up again, they hit the pedal to the
I'm
metal.
I'm open to suggestion. I don't.
No, you're absolutely entitled to it, but I want to warn you in advance.
That are straight and wide that have that problem late. And
we're being watched by radar.
The only thing they are is a nuisance.
Well, if it's any deterrent, you know, we're definitely. Yeah.
But okay. And that's then my opinion.
Has the borough ever, the branch pickup is great. I'm wondering if there's ever been any, has the town ever had leaf pickup?
Gee, no one's ever mentioned that before.
That's a big issue.
We don't have leaf pickup. It's very costly.
Is it?
I did go and speak to the mayor of East Windsor, seeing if we have some kind of, arrangement with them, agreement where they would do our leaf pickup, and she promised me that she would get back to me, and it has been it's 8.5 months. I've called periodically, and they tell me, yeah, they're thinking about it. So it's for us to do it ourselves is extremely costly. So that's why we're hoping that East Windsor might send their people over here.
The equipment is very expensive.
Yeah.
I mulch.
And there's no good solution because you're not supposed to dump them in the woods.
I know.
So there's no ideal solution. And so for now,
you
can't burn them, even though it smells so good. So
you just have to.
Thank you,
Chris. You have to have a permit for that, sir.
Resolution here, right? John Vo, 19 Farm Lane, also a member of Squad. One reason that Debbie was saying that we were very frugal with our finances is that a lot of services is offered without charge. For example, the EpiPen injection, a regular squad can't just go and inject somebody with an EpiPen. You need a doctor's direction, a doctor's, they call them, medical direction. Thank you. And my wife, who is a doctor, offer her service for free. So let's say she's not a doctor and we want to use the EpiPen if somebody have an allergic reaction, we'd have to pay somebody to bless us and say, yeah, I'm a doctor, you can use the EpiPen. So that's why we save money by that, and we're trying to get electric kind of stretcher, because if I were to go on a call with her and we go to Solar Village and somebody fell down, I'm pretty much on my own, me, her, and the state trooper. Sometimes we get a state trooper that's hands on. Sometimes we have a guy that's standing there and he's looking at us so that's the money part. Another part, I was a little bit confused when I answered a call the other day. I think I was with Jacob or something. We were driving to a call, and here comes Millstone Fire Department beating us, and we're like, what are you doing here? They're like, what are you doing here? So I just don't know what's going on with that.
Well, we passed a resolution the last meeting that Millstone would be, I guess it's called toned out at the same time as Roosevelt, so that they don't come in an ambulance, they come in their fire truck between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m., and they can have someone on the scene, within a few minutes. They will come just to provide some EMT, certified EMT care, until an ambulance arrives.
They can't transport.
They can't transport. They come. They're coming just to provide whatever stabilization they can until an ambulance comes.
Well, the problem is, only you mentioned it, we saw a bunch of firemen, but we didn't see EMT patches like this.
Because the firemen, every firefighter in Millstone is a certified EMT.
That's not the case.
That's not true.
It is true.
It's not true.
Okay. Well, that's why we're here, right?
You're not. Every fireman in Millstone is not an EMT. The career firemen are EMTs. If a gentleman or a lady arrives on scene as a first responder and they don't have a patch or they're known, they're not EMTs. They're just bystanders. And it's very, very helpful when we need physical help to move somebody, all right? But other than that, they can't touch patients. They're not supposed to do anything.
Wait, let me ask you something. Mr. Vogt, were they the people you saw in the fire truck? They came with a fire truck?
Yep.
Then they're EMTs.
That's not the case.
Well, okay, we won't be able to ascertain that here.
We were told. I've discussed it with them. The career people are required to be fire EMTs. Not all of the volunteers EMTs.
Exactly, but they're only coming between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. where it is there are the career people there. 6 p.m. on, yes, they're volunteers, and I'm sure you're correct that they're not certified EMTs. But we only, I don't want to use the word contract, we have an agreement with them to only come between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. when it is the career firefighter who's there.
Was that call a day call?
Sorry?
Was that call a day call?
It was during the day.
Yeah, 6 a.m. Monday to Friday. Excuse me, not on the weekends. Monday to Friday, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
It was on the weekend.
Oh,
it was
okay.
On a Saturday. I know, because I was home.
It was on the weekend, because I was there also.
This was just them deciding to hop in the truck and come, which they've done before.
I know you've told us that. But the way the agreement stands is that they're here from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. They can come from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., in which case it would be a career firefighter who is a certified EMT.
Okay.
And they need to have that patch on their sleeve. They have to wear identifying markers.
We can discuss that with them. Okay, so before we open this up at the table, well, I didn't close the public session yet. Is there anyone else with? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nancy.
Could you just state your name for the record?
Nancy Warnick,
we don't know you.
On the recording,
Homestead Lane.
We need to know too. That's all.
The agreement we have with Millstone, do we pay for that service?
No cost whatsoever.
Okay. Now, many times throughout many years, we've always heard the comment, but this is Roosevelt. Okay, so this is Roosevelt. We have a small community, a small squad. I trust our EMTs, our first responders. And I think to hold off to the end of the year to give them the monies they need to properly operate is not right. And I urge you to trust them as well. We all know where they live if we want to get back at them for anything. But give them their money now and just trust them. And they will give you, at their convenience, whatever kind of accounting that you would ask for. I'm sure in a discussion such as we've had tonight, it seems pretty clear their expenses are high, and $20,000 is not a great deal of money. Okay, thank you.
I have a couple questions.
Anyone else? Anyone who hasn't spoken?
Yes. I'm June Counterman. I live at 57 Lake Drive in Roosevelt. I have a idea, it took 45 minutes for a first aid squad to come to my house when my husband needed him desperately. So therefore, I've come up with an idea so we can teach everyone in Roosevelt how to do the Heimlich maneuver, how to do CPR, and I want them to be trained how to handle an emergency medical situation that arises until some volunteer, wherever they come from, to help them arises. Nothing's worse than waiting 45 minutes for help to arrive. If I did not know that, my husband wouldn't be alive today. And I think the priority is serving the community first, and that's what I want to do again. I want to serve by teaching everyone in town and any volunteer, wherever they may be, to help. And I would like it done in the borough hall here. I would like it done free of charge. There will be no certificates given, just the knowledge of how to handle an emergency situation. And I would like the borough council to help support me here in that they can advertise where I can't. They can put flyers in the bulletin where basically, you know, it's, they can do it much better than I can. So therefore, there's a lot of work to be done. I have people who have already said they would help. This could be done classes during the day and during the evening to accommodate everyone, whether they're young or old. And I think this is where I would like to put my effort, and I would like the council to back me on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
On a legal question, Greg, any liability for the council if we got behind that?
No.
Thank you. I just want to mention that every year, usually in January, the First Aid conducts an open class because all of our members have to be certified in CPR. In the past, we've advertised, and usually nobody from the community, I think once we had somebody from the school board show up, but other than that, we've never had any residents other than First Aid Squad members come. But generally speaking, every January, we conduct a CPR class. I would think that everybody who takes the class and successfully passes it has to get a CPR card. It wouldn't be worthwhile to have people who are trained but don't have that card because it does impose a certain amount of knowledge and authority.
But what I am suggesting, this will be just given the knowledge. I'm not asking for anything other than to help the person until the squad can arrive, if they do it all.
Right,
yes,
but
I mean, everyone's welcome.
But there's no CP, just educating somebody in CPR or, dealing with a choking patient or something like that. You have to, whoever teaches that class has to teach it to a defined national curriculum and so forth. If they teach it,
they will have to know according to what the medical people say. If that is
right, exactly.
They say fine, but right. I will make sure they know before they come in here.
I think it's It's on a lower level, but it's
right. It's just general knowledge.
You
have some idea what to do. Right. Right. I understand.
I want to comment about the fact that as of right now, in this meeting, you've notified us that you've changed our dispatch protocols without letting the First Aid Squad know this.
This was done at
actually the resolution when it was passed was put in your first aid box there. Where I put it.
It would have been nice if we could have come to the meeting to discuss it. I haven't seen the resolution. Does the resolution require that the people who come are equipped, certified, and have the proper training and equipment?
Resolution states that Millstone, a certified EMT firefighter from Millstone, will come on scene until ambulance arrives.
All of our ambulances are certified by the First Aid Council. There's a required list of equipment. For example, when the fellows who arrived with us on that call. And by the way, they were respectful and helpful. I'm not trying to diss them at all. They came off the truck. They were not properly attired. There was no insignia that indicated what they should, that they were, in fact, EMTs. Another group of them came not in a fire truck, right? They didn't have any equipment. They didn't have I didn't see any effort for them to document what was going on. These are all required things that any EMT who arrives on a scene must do. If your resolution doesn't require that they have that information, I suggest that you revisit your resolution and require it of the Millstone people who do show up. Also, our EMT, our ambulances, and you can walk out and you can see it, have a little sticker on the back that basically shows that they're certified from the First Aid Council. All right. If those are paid crews, there's different certification for paid crews than there are for volunteer crews. I don't know what the implication or the ramifications are of having paid people show up on our calls. There may be ramifications, and there may be insurance and liability ramifications.
Anyone else at all? All right, so should if we to discuss this now, should we close the public session and then open? Okay, so we close the public session at
8:26.
Okay, so I have.
I would just like to make a little statement, and then we can have input from all the different council people. No one here, no one is disputing the quality of work that our first aid squad provides, the necessity to have a first aid squad here, and we didn't want to step on any toes. We didn't want to insult anyone. We are simply responding to the needs of the community. We have been getting letters, phone calls, visits to meetings that the first aid squad was lacking in a few different ways. There was problems with calls that are made during the day with not enough response during the day. There were people waiting 30 minutes, 45 minutes. We needed to respond to the needs of the community. And so that's why we started trying to see what action we could take. Admittedly, having Millstone come is a Band-Aid until such time that either the county takes over or we have a fuller squad, more members who are also available during the day, or until we contract out to someone private. There's a myriad of possible solutions in the future, but for right now, we needed to take some action. We didn't do this because we felt the first aid squad in Roosevelt was substandard in any way. It was simply a matter of responding to the community needs that calls weren't being answered. So that's why the Millstone, augmenting the fire services with Millstone firefighters from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. was solely to provide some extra help, to have someone get to your house quickly and do a basic life-saving until, or stabilization, until an ambulance comes. As far as the finances, this is standard protocol with any nonprofit. There has to be oversight. It's not that we don't trust the first aid squad. That was never the situation. We just need to know where the money is being spent, how much money is coming in, because we have to think about the future. Is it possible that we may need some of the money for if we have to contract out to an additional squad, a private squad? We don't know what the future holds. We only know because it's in flux, and obviously it's not just Roosevelt. It's every town in New Jersey and across the country. But we need to be fiscally responsible, and we need to be responsive to the needs of the community. So we have to look at the big picture. And part of the big picture is looking at the finances of the first aid squad to see exactly what their financial situation is. And I have to say that we did ask a few different times and basically got no response. So this wasn't done in retaliation. It's not that we want to withhold the money. The money is given every year. But we didn't receive a response and on a number of occasions. And it's our fiduciary duty to look at the finances and also provide whatever help we can or guidance with the first aid squad so going forward we can do whatever's necessary to either, you know, have the 911 calls answered immediately, to have a fuller squad, whatever it takes. But none of this, no one's disputing the need for the Roosevelt First Aid Squad, the quality of work that the first aid squad does, or any, there's no negativity here. It was simply responding to what the situation is in Roosevelt and many other towns and knowing that we had to start to take some action. So at this point, I know a lot of people had things they wanted to say.
Well, I think I'd like to set up a finance committee meeting with representative or the president of the first aid squad and a financial representative to start looking at things and to have some give and take about what the needs of the squad are. We got a lot of the information tonight, which was great, about the cost of that stretcher for $30,000 and how needed that is, and I can see that. And a lot of that is very helpful, and that's the kind of information that I think the Finance Committee would like to hear.
Was lacking.
So that we can get a really good, clear idea of what your needs are and what the financial situation is, so that we can make recommendations to the full council and the mayor as to how to help out in that regard and to what extent we can do that. So if we can come up with a meeting date, and we will need a fair amount of financial information. We don't want anything that's restricted. We don't want to know the names of your donors. We don't want to know the people's houses who you've gone to provide first aid. A lot of that is HIPAA restricted by HIPAA. We don't need to know that. We don't want to know that. But what we want to know is, and have a clear idea of the financials, and to see to what extent we can help in that regard. So if we can come up with a couple meeting dates, that would be great. Monday, the 4th.
That's the day before elections, Mike.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't have it here because there'll be voting machines here, and you probably shouldn't have it in the same building where there's voting machines.
They'll accuse you of tampering.
But if you guys can come up with some meeting dates and all, we would appreciate that. And then we could sit down and we can discuss this. But I agree with a lot of what the mayor said, that we're very happy to sit down and to get the information that we really need to have a clear idea of what is going on. And we got some information tonight, which has been very helpful, at least to me, and I know other members of the council, as far as the costs of various things. And I know it's not cheap to run a first aid squad.
It wasn't the fact that $20,000 was too much money to give you. It was just a matter of looking at the financials and seeing what your expenditures are.
And if we could do it in committee and with a small group and look at the finances and review it in committee, then I think that's the way the council would like to do this. Makes sense to me.
Adam? Chad, do you want to expound a little bit on the nonprofits and the oversight you were saying before?
Much like every other nonprofit, when it comes to everything from donors to any kind of auditing organization, they have to provide an open view of their books so that when people are making donations, they are making informed decisions on those donations. This is why organizations like the United Way and other ones like that get a very bad rap based on their administrative costs versus how many are actually being utilized for the services which they're trumpeting for bringing in those donations. And it's the same sort of thing here. So, if your expenditures far exceed what should be, customary,
we would like to know that.
We'd like to know that. Or if you have a budget surplus that you're not, because again, they have to balance out, right? A nonprofit is a nonprofit. There shouldn't be heavy residuals for a nonprofit.
Okay.
Lou?
Yeah, I agree with exactly what Mr. Blumen said, Mrs. Hartley and the mayor said. If you read the New York Times, almost every day there is a notice saying that the books are open, of all nonprofits will advertise that the books are open for review by anybody who wants to come and see them. And Mr. Blumen told you just why, because donors, especially big rollers, high rollers, want to know where the money is going and what they're doing. They don't want to find out that they're being squandered. The second thing is, I was speaking with someone not too long ago who had an emergency call. He was in the doctor's office, and he was taken to the hospital. And he got a bill for $250. The ride was $500. That's three times what you're quoting for your ride, for your call. If you told me that one was $500 and one was $700, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't wonder about it. But $1,500, that's three times what a professional first aid or ambulance calls for. Wait a minute, listen to me. That to me,
professional is inappropriate.
Let me finish. That to me that to me turns on a red light, if I may, to wonder. You may be perfectly right, but I have the right at this point to question it, because it's a huge difference. I mean, this is, we're not talking about small, we're not talking about small potatoes. This is big money we're talking about. Three times as much. So, you know, we'll meet with you. I'm on the finance committee, by the way, for what it's worth to you. We meet with you. We, as we were told, we don't want to know names, money. I'm a donor every year to your squad. But the fact is that we don't want to know about all this stuff. There are people that want it private. We want to know. As a matter of fact, you know, I don't care about how much money you get for donations, because that's your business. It's not ours. It's how much money you're spending and how much we have to give to keep you going. It's as simple as that, I think. Am I correct?
Is anyone else? Joe, did you want to speak?
I would ask Neil and the first aid squad, what kind of relationship do you have with Millstone and other first aid squads around? I know Millstone doesn't have a first aid squad, but they have the fire department with their EMTs.
Well, so that's, Joe, you know what, that's not really relevant now. We just really are discussing.
Okay. I would hope that there would be a good relationship.
We're trying to get a good relationship with Allentown.
Allentown also, yeah.
We'll talk later, but it's a very complex and complicated situation.
What, with Millstone?
Well,
okay.
All right. Well, that's really not relevant now.
For another discussion.
Anyone else at the table have anything at all in response to this? Okay.
I think we're spinning wheels. I think the biggest thing they really need to look at is how to serve the community first. Then the money will be there. And you leave us sitting alone, anyone else, they got to work up a schedule so there's someone on duty 24 hours a day. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Jude.
I'll say to you.
That's easy to say. Perfectly easy to say, because when you women, many of you women. What? No. What I'm saying, if you let me finish, many of you were home all day. You had small children, and you were home, and you were able to make calls.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not that.
We're actually ready to. Do I have to motion to adjourn?
First, a motion.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
The meeting is adjourned at 8:40.
Sure.
Neil or John, could we get a couple days?
Yes, 8:39. Thank you.
I can tell you, whatever reporting you want.